to read chapters 7 and 8. Those of you who didn't do the homework still have another week in which to do it, because if Yitzhak Hashem will get to 7 and 8 next week, I want to do chapter 2 and then go back to a pasuk in chapter 1. Some of it was already said in a Haftorah shir, some of it has not, but there are all sorts of things that are important here for our understanding of Sefer Yehoshua. This is our class in the overview of Tanakh. And I still hope that I will be able to complete this overview of Sefer Yehoshua in about another, say, 4 weeks, so that we can go further. But the success of this course depends on your doing your homework. If you read 2 chapters, 3 chapters a week, you will have finished it in the during the course of the weeks that we're going to deal with it.
Chapter 8 is beautiful.
The war.
It's something, it's something to really study.
Chapter 8 is a chapter that one has to study with one of the classic Mefarshim. And after studying it with that Mefarsh, with the Malbim, then you will finally understand what it's really talking about. It's a classic battle, and the battle plan is described in vivid detail by the Malbim, but we're going to save that. We're going to save that. Chapter 8 is a very special chapter. But you know, I know what you're going to say. He says that about every chapter. All right. Okay, chapter 2. And as I say, some elements here we have already discussed in a Haftorah Shiva, but many of you may not have been there. But there's something, a number of things that are important that we're going to have to add now. Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun min Hashitim Shnayim Anoshim Meraglim Cheresh Lemor. And Yehoshua bin Nun sent from Shittim 2 people, spies, Cheresh in silence, Lemor, so saying to them. Their instructions were, Lechur u'et ha'aretz, go see the land, ve'et Yericho, and Yericho vayelchu, and they went for Yavo, and they came, Beit Ishazona, to the house of a woman who was Zona. Now the Targum Onkelus, the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel says, Zona means pundikait, an innkeeper, from the word Zon umefarnes hakol, to feed. Vayishkevu ushmor Rochav, and her name is Rochav. Vayishkevu shama, and they went to sleep there. All right. Obviously, of course, one cannot simply reject the idea that Rochav is a zona in the more traditional understanding of the word Zona. I mean, if she would be only an innkeeper, I think it would be quite an embarrassment to couldn't find a better name for her than Zona. And the fact is that we will see, according to the Gemara and to the Medrash, she was indeed Zona, a woman of ill repute. Okay, but we'll get to that later. There's one question that we have to deal with, and the Malbim deals very, very satisfactorily with this question. 38 years earlier, Moshe had sent Meraglim, and the Meraglim that Moshe sent brought down absolute disaster and destruction upon the Jewish people who are in the desert. It was the great tragedy of the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert, a terrible, terrible tragedy. Why does Yehoshua now risk the possibility of a repetition of that terrible, terribly tragic error? Yehoshua bin Nun sends Meraglim. Isn't Yehoshua bin Nun frightened that it may turn into another terrible tragedy? How does he do it? So the Malbim explains that in the event that we will read this pasuk carefully, and this is a classic example in all of Tanakh, how just about every word Every word has significance and meaning and importance and carries a message. We just learn how to read this pasuk. We will see what the difference is, what the differences were between the Meraglim who were sent by Moshe and the Meraglim that were now sent by Yehoshua. And the Malbim takes us through the pasuk by Yishlach Yehoshua bin Nun. Here, it is Yehoshua who is sending the Meraglim. It's not all of Israel. In the days of Moshe, it says that the Jewish people came to Moshe, they said, let us send spies. Yeah, there's a big difference between our whole people sending spies, so to speak. And here, one man, Yehoshua bin Nun, is sending them. Number two, Min HaShittim. Shittim was a city on the banks of the Jordan. Moshe had sent Meraglim from Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea was someplace in the Sinai desert, far from Eretz Yisrael, which represents the idea that there's a big difference between sending Meraglim when you are ready indeed to do battle, or having sent Meraglim from a distance far away from Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to see the differences. Shnayim Anoshim. Big difference between sending 12 people who represent 12 tribes and sending 2 people. Can you imagine sending off 12 people as spies? A spy mission of that sort? I mean, can we even call it a spy mission? I mean, 12. With great fanfare, we're sending off our secret agents to spy out the land. Have you ever heard of anything of the sort? Unheard of, yes.
But they're not totally different.
Next word. Here it says, Yehoshua bin Nun sent from Shittim 2 people, Meraglim. Here they are indeed called spies. We call that sin of, in the desert, we call it Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the Meraglim, but in the Parsha, in Parshat Shlach, they're not referred to as Meraglim, they are called Tarim, tourists. Moshe sent them Latur et Haaretz, to sightsee the land, not to spy it out. In other words, here we're really talking about spies. There it wasn't spies, it was tourists. People who were sent, as Sandy says, people who were sent with a completely different set of instructions. What did Moshe send them? What kind of instructions? Take a look at the land. Is it beautiful? Is it mountainous? The cities that are there, are they fortified? Are they not fortified? What kind of a people lives there? No, they were given all sorts of information to find out that you can go just by going through the land. You don't really have to spy out the land. They weren't spies. Go through the land and come back and give us a report of the country. It was the prime minister's or the president's mission to Israel. It's 12 fellas who are going to come and come back with a report of what they saw in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore the word Meraglim is not used there. Meragel is a real spy. Yehoshua's 2 people are spies. Cheresh, he sends them in silence. When you send, as we say, 12 people with great fanfare and a whole, all of Israel is aware of the fact that the Meraglim are going off, those are not really spies. And then there's something, of course, very interesting that isn't mentioned in the pasuk, and its omission is so meaningful. And therefore, when we read a pasuk, we also have to be sensitive, not only to what it says, but sometimes what it doesn't say. The omission cries out to us and is telling us something. Their names. In Parashat Shlach, the 12 Meraglim, we have the Eile Shemotam, and these are their names. Kulam, all of them were people of great name, and each name is listed. A spy goes out into the cold with a name. On the contrary, a spy who goes out into the cold goes out with an identity that has been created for him, an identity that covers up and conceals his own real, true identity. And that's why the Medrash says on the word Cheresh that Yehoshua sent them in silence, so that the Medrash says Cheres. Cheres means pottery. They needed a cover. A spy needs a cover. Remember telling you at the time when I went off to Russia in 1983, when it was still dangerous and exciting to go to Russia. So I went with a cover. I had business cards that said that I was vice president of a printing company on the east side of New York. I mean, I never stepped foot into it. I don't know how to print anything. I can't even work this first. Look in the tape recorder, how to go print. But I was vice president of a printing company, and my name, I'm not going to tell you what my name was. You know, we were all given English names at birth. I haven't used it for...
None of the vice presidents.
Yeah, well...
They only put in the money.
Anyway... So I came with, of course, you come with a cover. Yehoshua is sending real spies. Not like the miracle of Moshe, he's sending real spies. So what's their cover? Their cover, the Medrash says, is pots and pans. Cheres meaning pottery. He gave them pots and pans. They came into Yericho as the purveyors of pots and pans. Pots and pans, peddlers. This was their cover. That means, with all of the information as we see it in the words, it's very clear that the mission that Yehoshua sends is completely, radically different than the mission that was sent by Moshe. And it's just amazing to see the weight and the meaning to each and every word in the pasuk. Yehoshua ben Nun and not all of Israel send. They are sent from Shittim, which is right on the banks of the Jordan. Two people, not 12, their names are not mentioned. They are really meraglim, and they go off in silence with a cover. Lamor. And what is their mission? Go see the land and Yericho. The land around and Yericho. In other words, we have a specific destination. There's a specific purpose to this undertaking. They went and they came to the house of an Isha Zonah, Ushmorachov, Vayishkevu Shama. So here it is. This is a mission. Everything is clearly planned in advance. We're talking about two professional meraglim. This is a mission of great significance, and is executed perfectly. They arrive in the city. Yes, they are the purveyors of pots and pans. They arrive at the local inn.
Yes.
We're coming to that. Yeah, talk about. But we have another problem that appears immediately, even before that. The problem is, Vayeomar leMelech Yericho leMar, it was said to the king of Yericho, so saying, Hinei Anoshim Bo Heina HaLaila Mibnei Yisrael, behold, people have come here tonight from the children of Israel, lachpor et haaretz, to spy out the land. Do you understand? These great spies who have come with everything prepared well, they've come with their cover, and they slip into the city, and immediately it's known already. The king of Jericho already knows. I mean, if their covers would be blown a few days later, they made a misstep, they did something wrong. But we're talking about what it seems to me are two spies who are Kayakis. The Bahati brothers, what kind of brothers? The Marx brothers, I mean, Martin this is a joke. The king immediately finds out. What do you think would happen if we send spies into some country in the Middle East? And immediately they're found out. They didn't even have a chance to begin their mission. The next question is, how did the king of Jericho find out immediately?
He has
his own spies. Okay? So therefore, okay. One thing. I suggest one thing. Don't try and write spy novels for a living. That's right. It's all over, you understand. What's his name? Le Carre on the first page. You know, the KGB immediately finds out who the Mossad agents are and who the CIA has sent in, and that's the end of the novel. It's all over, finished. There's a shootout, and it's all over. Gevedev, something is happening over here. And more than that, if you want to know that something very, very special is happening, the next pasuk. Vayishlach Melech Yericho el Rochav Leimor, the king of Yericho sent to Rochav so saying, Hotzi Hanoshim Haboyim Elayich, send out the men who came to you, who came to your house, because they had come to spy out the whole land. Meanwhile, in the interim, the woman took the two men, and she hid them, and she said, the people came to me, I didn't know where they were from. By he Ashar Lizgar, as the gate was going to be shut and locked, Bachoshek in the dark, for Hanoshim Yatso, the men went out. Lo Yadati, I didn't know. On a holchu Hanoshim, where they went, Ritfu Maher, hurry, quickly, run Achareim after them, Kitasivim, because you will catch them. And meanwhile, what had really happened was, Vihihe Alotam Agago, she took them up to the roof, Fatit Menein the Pishdeha Eitz, and she had concealed them. By covering them with flax, haruchot la'alagag that was spread out on the roof. The question is the following. You understand, obviously, the question that has to be asked over here. Would this have happened in a real fiction story? Would anything of this sort happen? No. I'm sorry, sir. Take a look what happens over here. The king's officers stand outside the house and they say, Rochav, Jews came here this night to spy out the land. Send them out to us. Oh, so Rochav says, people came and I didn't know that they were from the children of Israel and the gate of the city was going to close. They left and the gate was closed. Quick, hurry, run after them and you will find them. In any one of our stories, do you know what would have happened? The officers of the king would have come in and knocked down the doors. They would have gone room by room, closet by closet, up on the roof, down in the miklat, through the basement. And they're standing outside, and they simply take what she says. They take her words for granted, and nobody even bothers to go in and check out where are these people. Maybe they are hiding in the house. Listen, when it's
Want
a question.
Say that God did it.
When, no, I'm not saying God did it. Don't get so firm with me. What we're talking about over here is we have to look at this situation through the eyes of reality. Here come spies who are well prepared, and they've come into the city. Their cover is blown instantly. And when the king sends men, the men stand on the outside and say, and they believe everything she says, send out those men to her. Yes?
Could there have been a Mosaic from across the
island? Certainly have no indication whatsoever of anything of the sort. You know how they found out so quickly?
Oh,
I mean, it's simple. You want to know? You can't wait. All right. You want to know how they found out so quickly? Katie, let's see what...
that what they were supposed to do, they actually already started doing. I mean, the process doesn't say that it was an instant revelation. It says that they came there to sleep, but it doesn't mean that the next morning or the next minute the king...
It seems that another timing over here is extremely tight. Because they're going to have to get back to the camp quickly, and Jews are preparing on the 10th day of Nisan to cross the Jordan. We don't have time to waste over here. Obviously, do you know what the Pasuk is telling us? It's quite clear. We're talking about a city that is under Otsar. It is there's martial law. There's a curfew. Now, they know in Yericho already that the mighty children of Israel are encamped on the other side of the Jordan. For that reason, you know what? It may even be that from the roofs of the houses of Yericho, you already see millions of Jews encamped, flags unfurled, they're ready to cross the Jordan. We are talking about a city that is locked, shut, tight. The Pasuk later is going to say, V'yericho segura u'mesugeret ein yotzei ve'ein ba. Yericho is locked, shut, tight. Nobody comes and nobody goes. We're talking about a city that is prepared for war, a city that is frightened, and they watch each and every person who comes in and out. They know instantly who is a foreigner and who's a stranger. But it's more than that. It's more than that. If they know instantly that these people are Mibnei Yisrael, the message has already been sent to the king of Yericho. The king of Yericho has already sent his men to the house of Rahab. Why haven't they simply taken these two spies? Why didn't they kill them on the spot? Why didn't they incarcerate them on the spot? Why didn't they take them captive and begin to work them over? So, if you will, we can say, if it would be one Jew who came into the city, no mela, but two came. This is an army. There are two Jews, Shnayim, who came in Bnei Yisrael. Do you know what these psukim are an indication of? There is a terrible, terrible fear. They're afraid of Bnei Yisrael. They're afraid of Bnei Yisrael, and therefore, the most that the king's men will do is stay outside and say, send out those men to us. And you know what? They may even hope that she's not going to stay. Is it the myth or the reality of the Jew in their minds? Because we're talking about a city, as we're going to see, a city that is aware of all of the miracles that have happened. Nobody has been able to stand before the children of Israel, and therefore two Jews. In other words, in a sense, it's the inevitable that's coming. This mighty people are finally knocking on the door of Yericho. And all of this is going to be borne out by Rahab's report to them. Rahab is going to make it very clear that we have lost all ability to fight. We are frightened out of our wits before the children of Israel. And that's the only way to understand why it is that nobody really does anything. Because there's fear. There's something similar in Tanakh. Shaul wants to kill David. David has gone home. David is married to Michal, the daughter of Shaul. Michal knows that her father is sending men to kill David. So she tells David, if you don't flee now, you're dead. She lowers him down. I mean, I imagine she tied some sheets together, and she lowers him down a back window, and he flees. In his bed, she puts some pillows and a number of other things, a shekel, you know, so it should look like there's somebody there. Shaul sends men to surround the house, and he gives them instructions, surround the house, and in the morning kill David.
Why
doesn't he simply tell them, go straight into the house, take David out, kill him? You know what's happening over here? Shaul is frightened of David. He's absolutely frightened. And when you're frightened, you know that there's something you have to do, but you're frightened. So you know what? You take certain steps, but there's always the delay. The delay. And you know what? Psychologically, the delay is in the hope, maybe I will never have to come face to face with it. All right, the truth. We have to call somebody. Okay? So one of three possibilities. We don't want to talk with the person, but we have to. The Rebbeinu can help and the line is busy. Right? That's great. Oh, boy, I tried. Okay. The next, of course, is a little bit hairier and worse. Like the line keeps ringing and ringing, and any second they may pick it up.
And nobody's home.
I mean, if there is a Nes Min HaShamayim, which is, of course, part of nature, is Mispar Shehigata Elav Eino Mekubar Zmanit. Right? Okay. There are certain things that we hesitate. Saul wants to kill David, but his fear of David is even more profound. So he sends men and he says, surround the house and kill him in the morning. What do you mean, surround the house and kill him in the morning? He's afraid of it. That's precisely what the king of Jericho is doing over here. He sends his men, and his men stand outside and they say, send out those people from Bnei Yisrael who have come. In any real life story, it wouldn't have happened. They would have come knocked through the doors, checked every room, every closet. They wouldn't have gone up on the roof. What are you talking about? They would have had men on all of the different roofs already moving in onto that roof. Do you know what we are faced with here? A people who are petrified, frightened, out of their wits, and this is going to be confirmed by Rachav. What does it say? V'ha'anoshim radfu achareim derech hayarden, and the people pursued them on the way to the Yarden, al ha'ma'abrot, to the bridges, v'ha'shar sogoru, and the gate was closed, was locked, achrei kasher yaltzu ha'rofim achareim, after the pursuers left. Incidentally, the mentioning a number of times the fact that the gates were closed and the gates were locked, also in order to paint for us the picture of a city out of fear, is locked, shut, tight. They know who comes and they know who goes. The Hemotedim Yishkofim, and they, the two greatest spies, before they had gone to sleep, and incidentally, Chazal tell us who the spies were. They were Kalev ben Yefuna and Pinchas. Kalev ben Yefuna, of course, is already a well-seasoned spy. In other words, they sent him out into the cold again. Yehoshua now is his control, and they send Kalev ben Yefuna out, and he goes out with Pinchas. But what's important is that as far as the Navi is concerned, their identity is unimportant. And here, we once discussed what I call the Torah ethic of anonymity. The ethic of anonymity is, if I am a true servant of the people, my identity, my ego, means nothing. A real spy is one whose self is completely dedicated and devoted to the task. He may never be able to reveal what other things that he did. He may never be able to get a big contract for his memoirs. The real spy is the one who goes out and knows that whatever he does, well, he may very well die in the line of duty, but he's doing it for country, for people, for the great ideal.
he will not be able to come back and brag about what it was that he did. For that matter, and if caught, the secretary will deny any knowledge of the spy. A real spy is anonymous. And not only a real spy is anonymous, anybody who is completely and totally devoted to an ideal does not care about himself. Classic example of that is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, when God says after the sin of the Egel, I'm going to destroy them, I'm going to make you into a great people, Moshe turns to God and he says, forgive them, v'im ayin, and if not, mecheinino misifrecha asher katafta, erase me from the sefer that you have written. Do you know what Moshe is saying? My identity, my name, unimportant. I am concerned about Klal Yisrael. If you're not going to forgive them, erase my name. That's the ethics of anonymity. And in fact, the Mefarshim tell us that's why there is one parsha in all of Torah from the beginning of Shemot where Moshe's name does not appear, and that is in Parshat Va'atah Titzaveh. Va'atah Titzaveh, you, God says to him, you command the Jewish people to make unto me the Mishkan and all the rest. Moshe's name is not mentioned once in that sedra. Parshat Va'atah Titzaveh usually, in most years, occurs on the week of Zion Adar, the week of the 7th of Adar, the week of Moshe Rabbeinu's passing. And the fact that his name is not mentioned there is the indication that he is the outstanding servant of his people. His own identity is unimportant. That's a real servant of a people. Where does the ethics of anonymity, where does it come from? Where does it come from?
Hashem?
Yes. Who is the great anonymous one in creation? I always give the example of the artist who has painted a magnificent portrait. So someplace down at the bottom, he signs his name. God created a world most magnificent in all of its beauty. He just didn't sign his name down at the bottom. He is the anonymous one. If we are intelligent, then we will know that he is the one who indeed created all that exists. God says to Moshe at the snare, Ze Shmi Lo'olam. Moshe asks, I'm going to go to the Jewish people there, and I'm going to come to Pharaoh, and I'm going to tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. And I'm going to come to the Jewish people, and I'm going to say, God sent me. So they're going to ask me, what's his name? What's his name? So first God says, Yashir, Yeah. And then he says, I'm the one who is going to be with them through all of their history. And then God says, Zeshmi Lo'olam. This is my name, Le'olam. So Le'olam means forever. But Rashi points out that the word Le'olam is spelled Lamed, Ayin, Lamed, Mem, without a Vav between the Ayin and the Lamed. Le'olam would have been with a Vav. It's without a Vav. Do you know what Le'olam means? Le'olam means Be'ilum Shem. Ilum Shem means an identity that is covered, obscured. God says, I am the anonymous one of creation. I'm there, but you don't see me. I'm there, but you don't see me. The ethics of anonymity, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is there in the background, silent, shah, still. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the great student of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, understands also his name and his reputation and his ego is insignificant. What is important is the mission, and the mission is leading Klal Yisrael. A real spy is a spy like the kind that appears here, whose names are not mentioned. In Parashat Shlach, where everyone's name has to be mentioned, that's not a spy. Yes? Oh, what I mean that he is anonymous, Sure, in Torah he appears, but in creation he could at any moment appear to the whole world and say, listen, I am the creator. Has Sefer Bereshis really made a difference to anyone except the believer? A whole world had rejected the existence of God until Avram came. He transmits it verbally that he is the creator. But one can go through all of life from beginning to end, a long life, without seeing any sign, you know, God was here, or God created this. He is the great artist who has not put his name on the canvas, unless you look at the canvas clearly. Ein tzur ke Elokeinu. Chana says this, Ein tzur ke Elokeinu, which usually means there is no mighty one like God. And the Gemara says, Ein tzayor ke Elokeinu, there is no artist like God. He is the magnificent artist who made it all, but didn't sign his name down at the bottom. Yes? And Pinchas is Eliyahu. The Gemara also says it on the fact that in Pasuk, in Pasuk 4, Pasuk Dalet, it says, Vatika Pelisha Shnei Anoshim, the woman took the two men, Vatitzpeno, and she hid him. Problem started off with a plural, and then we go to a singular. The woman took the two men, Vatitzpeno, and she hid him. So Rashi says, Yesh mikraot derapsukim, midabrim al harabin ki yachid derapsukim, where the many, the pasuk will use a singular to describe the many. In other words, the first pshat that Rashi says is, this is an acceptable form in biblical writing.
Unity.
And furthermore, Rashi says, because she hurried that quickly to hide them, it was as though she was hiding one person, concealing one person and not two. And then Medrash Haggadah, the Medrash Haggadah says, Rabbi Tanchuma, Yesh Pinchas v'Kalev hayu, these two fellows were Pinchas and Kalev. U Pinchas omad lefneihem, v'lo ra'u lefi shaya kamala. Pinchas, remember Chazal tells us that Pinchas was Eliyahu. Pinchas was like an angel. He was the invisible man. He really didn't have to be, he didn't have to be hidden. Only one of them had to be hidden, and that was Kalev. Davaracha, a third shot that Rashi says, Batitz Beno, she hid him, means that she hid one here and one there. She didn't hide the two of them together, but each one separately. Kol echad v'acham b'fnei atzmo. So you have your choice over there. Now, they had not yet gone to sleep. She went up to the roof. And she said to the men. And here what emerges is the uniqueness of this woman who usually, I don't think we fully comprehend the greatness of Rachav. Rachav? Yes, Rachav the Zona is one of the most unusual women of Tanakh. And it says, Batomer El Anoshim, she said to the men, Yadati, I know, Ki Natan Hashem Lechem Et Haaretz, that God has given the land unto you, V'chi Nafla Imatchem Aleinu, your fear has fallen upon us, V'chi Namohu Kol Yoshvei Haaretz Mipneichem, all of the inhabitants of the land have melted before you. Kishamano, because we heard, Eitasher Hovish Hashem Et Meyamsuf Mipneichem, that God had dried the waters of the Yamsuf before you. Now remember, she is now talking about something that had happened 40 years earlier. B'tzeitchem Mitzrayim, when you went out of Egypt. V'asher asintem, and we know what you did now only a few months ago. L'shnei malcheu Amori, to the two kings of the Amori, asher be'ed ra'yadim, who are on the other side of the Jordan, the east bank. L'sichon ula'od asher hecheramtem otam sichon, and og whom you destroy. Vanishma, and we heard, v'yimas l'vavenu, and our heart melted, v'lo koma od ruach b'ish mipneichem, and the spirit has not arisen in man before you, ki Hashem elokeichem, because God, your God, who Elokim, he is the God, v'ashamayim imal, and the heaven above, v'al ha'oretz mitachas, and on the earth below. Yes, Sandy. Well, we have no idea who she was a descendant of. All that we do know, who are going to be her descendants, but we don't know who she comes from. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about Rachel, but there's more. What's most important over here is, make a comparison between the Meraglim that was sent in the days of Moshe and the report they came back with and the report of this Isha Zona who lives in Yericho. I mean, the brilliance and the clarity with which she is able to see what has transpired. She knows it already from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim 40 years earlier. She knows that God is God in heaven above and in earth on earth below. We're talking about a woman who has absolute clarity of vision, yes, and judgment. And therefore she says, swear to me, swear to me by God, Ki asiti imachem chesed, I've done kindness with you. Vasitem gam aten in beit avi chesed, you should do with my father's house kindness. And unetatem li ot emet, and give me a sign that is true. Just let me read briefly a few things about Rachel. So first of all, you have to know a number of things. What you have to know is that you know who Rachel is going to marry. Or who's going to marry Rachel? Yehoshua is going to marry Rachel. Incidentally, I would assume that this is a marriage made in heaven. 40 years earlier, who was the one that was able to see with absolute clarity? It is Yehoshua who is able to see. Rachel is able to see with absolute clarity. The Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar says, Zachta, she was worthy, she yatzu mimena shmona nevi'im v'kohanim, 8 prophets and kohanim came out of her. And who are the 8 prophets that came from Rachel? Remember, Rachel Hazona. Not the pshat of Targum, Yonatan ben Uziel. Yirmiyahu, Chilkiyahu, Saraya, Maaseya, Barak ben Neria, Hanamel, and Shalom. We're talking about major prophets that came from her. And the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda says, Af Chulda ha-Neviya ha-Tam ibnei b'neha shal Rachav. Chulda, the prophetess, was also from the children of Rachav. Rachav, we are talking about a woman who is a Ger Tzedek of the highest order. She has a tremendous, tremendous ability to see. The Chazal say, Yesh Noshim Chasidot Giyorot. There are very pious women who are converts. Hagar, Osnat. I'm going to go, this Ruth is going to be mentioned. Hagar, Osnat Bat Potifera Kohen On, who was the wife of Yosef. Tzipporah. Now the Medrash here says, Shifra and Puah. Shifra and Puah, the midwives, we're usually aware of the fact that they were supposed to be Yocheved and Miriam, but not everybody agrees. There are opinions that Shifra and Puah were Egyptian women. Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro. Bat Paro, the daughter of Rachav, Ruth, and Yael, Eshet Chever Hakeni. Yael is the one who killed Sisra. Yes, who killed Sisra. Chazal go on to say, Rav Shimon ben Elazar says, "Kishi Yisrael osin ritzono shel makom, when Israel does the will of God, Shmo mitgadel ba'olam, his name becomes great in the world. Shenamar, as it says, Kishomanu, what does Rachav say? Because we've heard that God had dried the Red Sea from before you. And we know Ki Hashem Elokechem, Hu Elokim, your God is the God in heaven above and of the earth below. When Israel does not do the will of God, Shmo mitchalel, his name becomes desecrated amongst the nations of the world." And they bring another pasuk for them for that. Further, the Gemara says, Yitro amar, when Yitro came to the desert, he said, "Ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elohim, God is greater than all other gods." You know why? Because they say, Chazal tell us that Yitro worshipped all gods until he finally came to the worship of Hashem. Naaman was commander-in-chief of the forces of Aram, the one who was a leper and was healed by Elisha. He said, "Hineinu yadati ki ein Elokim b'chol haaretz ki im b'Yisrael. Behold, I now know that there is no God throughout the earth except for the God of Israel." And Rachav said more than all of them. She saw God. Yes, Toby.
I just want to say, since therefore, about the
bride, how old is Rachav? Good question. According to Chazal, she began her life of ill repute at age 12. She was 12 years old when Klal Yisrael went out of Egypt. And she said then, at that point, at the same time that she began that loose life, she had already been impressed by the God of Israel. And for 40 years, she continued to ply her profession in Yericho. And then it seems that she turned to God and she said, "Forgive me for the 40 years that I should have accepted you, because I knew who you were already at Kriyat Yamsuf and at Yitziat Mitzrayim. Forgive me." And she accepts upon herself Chala, the halachas of Nida, Hadlakat Hamer, and then finally, of course, she becomes a full diyara. Very, very special woman.
She was over 50.
She was 52. She was 52.
How old was he?
How old was Yoshua? When they went out of Mitzrayim, Yoshua was 56. 56 plus 40, 96. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a beautiful medrash. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to Rachav, or about Rachav, "At Amart, you said, Ki Hashem Elokechem, Hu Elokim, God your God is God. Nicha Ba'odetz, I can understand that you say that on earth below, because this is within your experience. How do you know to say that there is no God like me, Tashamayim Imal, in the heavens above? So at Amrit, Mashaloda Id Beinayach, you said something that you didn't see with your own eyes. You didn't see it with your own eyes, and you said it. Chayech, I swear, Shebeneich, Omeid v'ro'eh ma'shelo ro' anevim. Your son is going to arise and he's going to see things that none of the other prophets saw." According to this medrash, one of her descendants was Yechezkel. Yechezkel was the one who was Yechezkel ben Buzi, the one who was able to see Ma'aseh Merkava, the chariot of God himself. That God says to her, "You said things that you didn't see with your own eyes. I am going to show your descendants something that nobody else has seen." I don't know why it's so interesting to me, the famous medrash that says, "Ra'ata shifcha al hayam, a shifcha by the sea saw more than Yechezkel ben Buzi Hanavi." I don't know, I have a feeling that there was a Shifra who wasn't by the Yam and saw so much, and that's Rachav who was in Yericho, saw so much merely by virtue of the fact that she had heard what God had done. Now, okay. I just want to, this is a fascinating parak. Chapter 2 of Yeshayahu, of Yehoshua is fascinating. But I want to show you something even more fascinating about it. In order to fully appreciate the second parak of Yehoshua, we have to go back to a pasuk, two psukim in parak Aleph. And I point this out so because this is something that we have to be aware of in general in our study of Tanakh. I want you to take a look at Pasuk Yud, Pasuk 10 in chapter 1, and then Pasuk 12 in chapter 1. Pasuk 10 says, by Yitzav Yehoshua et Shotrei Ha'am Leimor, Yehoshua commanded the officers of the people, so saying, go through the camp, command them, tell them to get ready in another 3 days, we're crossing the Jordan, prepare yourselves, pack. There. Okay? Because we're coming to Yisrael Shloshet Yamim. In another 3 days, Atem Ovim et Hayaden Ezeh, you are crossing this Yaden, Lavot to come, Lareshet et Haaretz, to inherit the land, Asher Hashem Elokeichem Nalten Lachem Lishta, that God your God is giving to you as an inheritance. So we're going to see there's a pasuk later from which it means the man stopped up on the seventh day of Adar, the day on which Moshe died. We are going to see they're going to cross the Jordan in another 3 days, that is on the 10th day of Nisan. They're going to make a first Korban Pesach on the 14th day of Nisan. All of Israel is going to be circumcised again. They had not been circumcised for 40 years in the desert. And the second day of Pesach, they're going to begin to eat from the new grain. And the Gemara asks the question, what did they eat all of this time? The man that fell on the seventh day of Adar lasted. Haman shebichleihem, the man that they had with them. Usually the man would disappear within 24 hours. It was gone. I mean, haman shebichleihem, the man that they had. The point that I want to make over here is the following. Yehoshua commands them to prepare in another 3 days, we're going to cross the Jordan. Now, if everything is following in chronological order over here, then we're going to have a very serious problem. It's the seventh day of Nisan. God has appeared to Yehoshua and he's told him, Chazak ve'amatz, be strong and be courageous. We're crossing the Jordan. Yehoshua gives instructions. We're crossing the Jordan. Now, if Perek Bet of Yehoshua follows chronologically, then we have a very serious problem. And it's a problem that all of the Mepharshim deal with. Because these two Meraglim are going to be hiding in the mountains outside Yericho for 3 days. It took them a day to get there. They hide in the mountains for 3 days. And finally, after they assume that all of the search parties who are looking for them have returned to Yericho, they leave the mountain, cross the Jordan, come to Yehoshua and report. The mission has to take a minimum of 5 days. Now, we have a problem. Yehoshua has just not given instructions in another 3 days for crossing the Jordan. That's on the 10th. Right? That's 3 days. If everything follows chronological order and only now is Yehoshua going to send the Meraglim, they're not going to get back until the 12th. By that time already, Jews are going to be in camp at Gilgal, not far from Yericho. Something has gone wrong in all of the timing over here, says the Malbim the following. And what's important is the structure of a pasuk. And here is where I want you to look at pasuk Yud, and at Pasuk Yud Bet. Pasuk Yud, we read, was, and Yehoshua commanded Shotrei Ha'am Lamar, prepare yourselves. Tell everybody to prepare themselves. Pasuk Yud Bet says, Vila Ruveni, Vila Gadi, Vila Hatzi, Shevet HaMenashe, Omar Yehoshua Lamar, and to Ruven, to God, and to half the tribe of Menashe, Yehoshua said, so saying. What does he say to them? Remember that which you promised Moshe, that you're going to cross armed before your brothers. And they say, yes, we remember. We're going to go on to cross the Jordan. There's something about Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Bet. And this is a general rule throughout all of Tanakh. Whenever a verb is used, a verb and a noun, there are two ways in which it can be written. Let's take that Pasuk 10. It begins with the verb, Vayitzav Yehoshua, and Yehoshua commanded. Right? Could that have been written in a different way, that Pasuk? The Pasuk could have been written, Ve'et Shotrei Ha'am Tziva Yehoshua Lemar, where the noun, or one of the nouns, comes before the verb. And the officers of Israel, Yehoshua commanded. That's precisely what we have in Pasuk Yud Bet. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Bet again. Vila Ruveni, Vila Gadi, Vila Hatzi, Shevet HaMenashe, Omar Yehoshua Lemar. Why doesn't it say what would be the normal way to write it? Vayomer Yehoshua, and Yehoshua said to Reuven, to God, and to half the tribe of Menashe. What's the difference between the verb coming at the beginning or the verb coming at the end? The difference grammatically is very, very simple. The difference is, you know what Pasuk Yud Bet means? To Reuven, to God, and to half the tribe of Menashe, Omar Yehoshua, Yehoshua had said previously. When the verb comes at the end, we Israelis would call it a flashback. It's not that things are following in chronological order. The chronological order is take the first pasuk. Vayehi acharei mot Moshe, after the death of Moshe, Ever Hashem, Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua. God said to Yehoshua. Immediately after God finishes speaking to Yehoshua in Pasuk Yud, Vayitzav Yehoshua, Yehoshua commands Shotrei Ha'am Lemar. And you know what? But then in Pasuk Yud Bet, what begins is they're telling us, but you know, Yehoshua had already spoken earlier to Reuven, to God, and half the tribe of Menashe. And he had told them, remember, you're supposed to cross the Jordan. Now, following in that story, you know what is part of the flashback? All of chapter 2. Yehoshua had spoken to the Reuven, God, and half the tribe of Menashe. And while we're talking back there, at an earlier point in time, he sent Miraglim, and they came to Rachav, and there was a whole conversation with Rachav, and they came back. All of this had taken place earlier. Says the Malbim, you know when all of this took place? All of this took place during the 30 days after the death of Moshe. What happened over here was the following. At the end of the 30 days of the death of Moshe, at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, God appears to Yehoshua and says, as I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Arise, cross the Jordan. Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and be courageous. Do you know what God is telling Yehoshua? That upon your entry into Eretz Yisrael, I am going to be with you. Your entry into Eretz Yisrael is going to be miraculous. As I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Yehoshua hears this on the seventh day of Nisan at the end of the 30 days after the death of Moshe. So in Pasuk 10, he immediately gives instructions. Get ready, we're crossing the Jordan. Beginning with Pasuk 12 in the first parak, we have the great flashback. Before God had appeared to Yahushua, Yahushua assumed that the entry into Eretz Yisrael was going to be b'derech ha-teva, in the normal way in which people cross rivers and wage wars. So therefore he had already earlier begun to prepare himself, first of all by speaking to Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh and telling them, listen, you fellas had better be megayes, all of your miluim, you better call up all of your reserves, because you had promised me, you had promised Moshe that you're going into Eretz Yisrael. They said yes. And meanwhile he had also sent Miraglin, because if we're going to enter Eretz Yisrael in the normal fashion of all conquering armies, or armies that are waging war, then you need scouts to go out. But now, what's really happened is the whole mission was mission unnecessary. Do you know what really emerges from all of this? After God speaks to Yahushua, then he knows he didn't have to speak to Reuven and to God. He didn't have to send the Meraglim. All of this is the flashback of what Yahushua had done during the 30 days after the death of Moshe. But now none of this is necessary. In other words, there's a major perek in Tanakh that really turns out to be unnecessary. What do we gain from it all? Do you know what we gain from it all? An acquaintanceship with Rachel, a great woman. That's what we gain from it all. That's what we learn from Perek 2. Because the mission turned out to be a mission that was absolutely unnecessary. When did he send the mission? He sent the mission as long as he thought that the entry into Eretz Yisrael was going to be b'derech ha-teva. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that they had come to prepare rafts that were going to cross the Yarden. They were going to put bridges across, pontoons. They didn't know yet that the waters are going to split and dry up, and he's going to cross as they had crossed the Red Sea 40 years earlier. So what has taken place over here is the moment Yahushua finds out that God is going to be with him and he's going to enter Eretz Yisrael miraculously, all of the missions and everything that he had prepared before became unnecessary. Therefore, we no longer have a problem with the timing of the spy mission. What was our problem with it? If he sends them the 7th of Nisan, it's going to take them 5 days until they travel there, hide in the mountains, come back. It's the 12th of Nisan. It's all over. Jews have already crossed the Jordan. No, he had already sent them earlier. They had gone out yet during the 30 days of mourning for Moshe. They may very well have returned. They may very well have returned even before God spoke to Yahushua. And now Yahushua knows that all of that information is unnecessary. Yes. I think that why put it off? In other words, we're ready. I mean, I can very well imagine somebody making a hesed of the Moshe during the Shloshim and saying, what greater commemoration can there be for the memory of Moshe than Klal Yisrael finally doing what he worked his whole life in order to accomplish? Maybe there were even voices who said, "Stay gedot layardain. Now, let's cross the Jordan now." I mean, there's nothing that says that they can't do anything during the Shloshim of Moshe. All that we find out is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Yahushua at the end of the Shloshim. So you know what you raise? An interesting question. Why does God wait till then? That's an interesting question. Maybe it goes back to what we said 2 weeks ago. Maybe Yahushua was incapable of receiving a message sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu during the Shloshim, because Yahushua was in such a state of mourning that he could not accept it. Well, you want to have it. He's in mourning, so he can't receive Nevuah, because for Nevuah you have to be in a state of Simcha. But even a person who is in mourning has the ability to give instructions and send people and do and plan and give it over to his staff. Yes? I was afraid that somebody was going to say that. Yeah. I can still I can still defend my first lecture and defend it even more strongly. That the first communication, the first three words that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yoshua are Moshe Avdi Meis. And you know what the purpose of that communication is? To remove the Avelus, to remove all of the... You know, oh, this is getting more beautiful. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can appear to man with a prophetic message, a message of Nevuah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can also appear to man as he does through Chumash. How does he appear? The Gemara says, how does he appear? HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parashat Bereshit is the Malbish Arumim. Right? He is the one who clothes the naked. He prepares clothing for Adam v'Chava. In Parashat Vayero this week said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Mevaker Chola. He comes to visit the sick. In next week's Sedra, he is going to be the Menachem Avel. Yitzchak's mother had died, he's Menachem Avel. The end of Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kovet at HaMeitim, he buries the dead. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Gomel Chesed. The first three words that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yoshua, Moshe, Avdi, Meit, this is God, the Menachem Avelin. With those three words of Nichum Avelin, do you know what happens? Yehoshua's entire frame of mind changes. And therefore, now Va'ata, God now begins to speak in the voice of prophecy. Kum Avorat Hayadein, arise and cross the Jordan. Not bad. There are two parts to that. Very good. Okay. Yes, help me. How many more do you have?
You have
Tamar,
but she's not.
No, Tamar I would not put into the same category with Rachel.
No, but she acts as if she you have many of them, many times, you have people, either women of not such untarnished
reputation. But you're going to have to... there are two things. No. The point that I want to make over here is, here is a whole chapter in Tanakh, and because of the position of one word in the perek before, it turns out that the whole perek really was unnecessary. That's what's most significant. The whole mission was unnecessary. But that it's important for that mission to be written in Tanakh. For what purpose?
Rachav.
The real purpose is Rachav. I don't see what else we gain from it. So there was a spy mission that was sent off, and I'm even wondering how Yehoshua, and at the end of the paragraph says, Yehoshua listened to them. You know, what was he going to tell them? Here they come back from in from the cold, they had endangered their lives, they come back. I mean, what's Yeshua going to tell them? You know, I'm sorry to tell you, we couldn't get a message to you, but we should have aborted the mission. Let's just for a moment see, what does it indeed say at the end of Perek Bet, before we close? She had said... In Pasuk Yud Bet, in Perek Bet, she had said, swear to me that you will do with me kindness and with my father's house. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, keep my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters and all that belongs to them alive. Save us when you come in to conquer the city. And the women said, and the men said to her, yes, they promised that they're going to save Rahab and her entire family. Pasuk Tetvav, she let them down by a rope, through the window, because her house was in the wall of the city. And in the wall, in other words, the wall had houses built in to it. And so she sent them down by the rope. Okay, she told them, go flee to the, run to the mountains, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there for 3 days until the pursuers return, and then you can go on the road. Okay?
then they make the condition with her that yes, she should leave that rope hanging out of the window, and that will be the indication that everybody who's in that house is to be saved. Pasuk 22. Vayelchu, and they went, Vayavohu Ha-Hara, and they came to the mountain, Vayeshu Sham Shloshetavim, they remained there for 3 days, Ad Shavu Harotim, until the pursuers returned, Vayavachu Harotim, B'chol Aderech, the pursuers looked for them through the entire road, V'lo Matzahu, and they didn't find them. Vayashuvu Shnei Anoshim, Vayedu Me'ahar, the two of them went down, they came down from the mountain, Ayabru, they crossed the Jordan by Avoh, Yeshua ben Nun, they came to Yeshua ben Nun, by Yisabru, Lord, Kol HaMotzotu Tam, and they told him everything that happened to them. By Yomru, Yeshua, and they said to Yeshua, Ki Natan Hashem B'yadeinu et Kol HaAretz, Yikam Namoru Kol Yoshvei HaAretz Mipaneinu. God has given in our hands all of this land, and all of the inhabitants of the land have melted from before us. What I suspect from this last pasuk, that while Yehoshua had sent the Meraglim during the course of the Shloshim, they returned to the camp after the Shloshim. In other words, he may have sent them, say, on the fifth day, the fourth or the fifth day of Nisan, because if they would have come back with this report before the Shloshim are over, Yehoshua would not have needed God to tell him that the land has been given into their hands. He sends them before the Shloshim are over. God appears to Yehoshua and tells Yehoshua, the land is yours, I'm going in with you. They then return and confirm what it was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had said. And therefore, the very next pasuk, first pasuk in chapter 3, Vayashkin Yehoshua Papokeh, Yehoshua got up in the morning, and we've also always pointed out, what have we pointed out? What does it mean that somebody got up in the morning? What does it mean? Huh? More than that? Zvizim Makdim in the mitzvah, more than that? What is Rav Kook's great part on Avram by the Akedah that he got up? That he slept well the night before. When it says Yehoshua gets up in the morning, that means he gets up in the morning good eyes geschlafen. Do you know why? Because he's at peace. He's secure, absolutely. He has the guarantee of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be with them. The Meraglim come back and point out that they're frightened out of their wits. God has given the land into our hand. Yehoshua, therefore, can sleep peacefully. B'shalom u'b'shalva. Vayisu mi'hashitim. They journeyed from Shittim. They came to the Jordan. Hu v'chol b'nei Yisrael. Vayolinu sham, and they stayed overnight there, Tedem Ya'avodu, before they crossed. This is the ninth day of Nisan in the year 2488 from creation. Yes?
I always wondered why these spies
never went. We're saying even more. The whole mission, you know what the whole mission is? The mission is to save Rachav.
Right.
To discover Rachav and to save Rachav. If they wouldn't have come, in other words, Yehoshua doesn't know it, but he's sending them to save his future wife.
Wow.
This is tremendous.
Actually, they came back with the information, only told them
exactly
about the morale.
Extremely important.
They didn't have any other contact.
There only is one of... No, but they haven't come back with any kind of military information. They've only come back with a matzav haruach.
Wow.
A morale report. And in addition to... They're really, for all intents and purposes, you know what they're doing? They're quoting the words... They're quoting the words of Rachel. The first words of Rachav were, Ki Natan Hashem Lachem Et Haaretz, God has given you the land. They're quoting Rachav. Can you imagine? They're quoting Rachav Azona. This is the report. They may very well have seen other things, most probably the fact that nobody came into the house to look for them. Let me ask you.
I mean, agoraphobia here. You know exactly where to look. I mean, they wouldn't have bound them up on the roof. The fact that nobody came in. I suspect something else. The fact that the pursuers didn't find them. For 3 days, they're looking, and they don't find them. I don't think they're looking.
And they're looking.
Yogata! Velo matzata, Chazal tell us. You try, and you didn't find. Altamen, don't believe it. It means they weren't really looking. I mean, how much of a distance is it from Yericho to the Yarden? What do you think we're talking about? They didn't find. In other words, they come back with a report of Matzam HaRuach Ba'aretz. Yes? I don't think that anybody was tainted. The Gemara says that in the course of 40 years, a lot of people went off the rope over there and went down the rope. And it was, she may have been, according to Chazal, her house may have been in the wall of the city because it made egress and, what's the opposite of it? Entry and exit a great deal easier. The only thing, I think I've made the point that I wanted to make. That the purpose of the parak is not only the report. The report is really confirming already what Yahushua knows because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in fact told him. It is to discover and to save Rahab, most unusual woman from whom Nevi'im and Kohanim came out of her. The ability to see clearly. A blessed, blessed ability. Okay. I'm sorry, Katie has a question. No, hang in one moment, yes?
All right. Now, the principle of Emukdam
Which is not in any way hurt by what's happening over
here. I'm just asking whether this particular principle, which we apply,
it applies all over.
All over Tanakh.
All over Tanakh.
We have also other examples.
All over Tanakh. But over here, it's not an example of Ein Mugdam U'Miyocha. Over here on the contrary, Ein Mugdam U'Miyocha means the principle she's talking about is the fact is the principle.
Not necessarily given to us
no.
in the Pshat.
Let me point out. Let me point out that the general rule is that Tanakh, all of Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ktuvim, follow in chronological order. There may be deviations, and in the few places where there is a deviation, there has to be a very good reason. In the normal order of things, I will tell you things in their normal order. If it's out of order, and that may happen, we have to have absolute proof, and there has to be a very special reason. Over here, incidentally, everything does follow chronologically. God appears to them, and only afterwards are we told what had happened earlier, to tell us that what had happened earlier was no longer important. But there's no... But grammatically, everything is following in proper order. I can take...
From the
cause
of your contradiction.
No. It's...
Stylistic...